I find that a lot of the leadership conversation is quite hackneyed. I don't see a great deal of behavioral change and systemic change in organizations and society. So what? Willem, you introduced me to the concept of exponential leadership. The first question is, what is exponential leadership?
Firstly, I would say context is ultra important. And one must be careful, in my mind at least, to cast broad judgments onto ecosystems that have complex nuances and pockets with varying characteristics and attributes. It's almost like no one can say America is and finish that sentence correctly because it's so vast and so diverse. Depending on where you're referring to, your answer looks very different. And there's no one label that can encapsulate all of that complexity. So let's kick off just by acknowledging that dynamic. Sure. And then asterisking everything that we talk about today with that understanding. We're going to try and wrap our heads around this, but it's wide. So let's do a quick example. As you know, I'm an accountant, and so I like to excel everything, or I'm led to believe that my ilk likes to excel everything. Essentially, if you unpack just what exponential means, first of all, us as humans, we're not geared in our firmware to deal with an exponential world, which is super ironic given that we're the ones that created it. But essentially, from an early human perspective, the firmware that we went to market with, which hasn't had a software upgrade for 50,000 years, was geared towards solving for four variables, which is where's their food, where's their danger, where's their shelter, and where's their appropriation opportunity. And appropriate management of those variables constituted your remaining in the gene pool. We have a limbic system that relies on the amygdala of the brain to interpret the environment around us and ascertain risk. And should there be risk, depending on the size of that risk, the volume of blood and oxygen pumped to large muscle groups is more or less. It's concomitant and proportional to the risk, which literally means that as the risk factor envelops our physiology, we as humans become stupider in our decision making because there's less juice with which to run the mainframe. Now, around us, the world has started to change on a compounding basis. Einstein actually quipped superbly in saying that compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. Those that understand it earn it, those that don't pay it. And in a similar fashion, the complexity, primarily due to technological advances that have in their own right exponential change quotients, has caused this meteoric rise in complexity for which our firmware suffers incompatibility. And we default to normal human behavior as opposed to the new era of behaviors where actually control of your amygdala is probably one of the foundational skill sets to learn for leaders so that we don't default into literally stupid decision-making patterns because of an inability to appropriately interpret risk factors. So if you took a garden snail and you measured its speed, it moves at an average of 0.047 kilometers an hour. That's so slow that you would liken it to drying paint. If I said to you that that snail can double its pace after every meter that it moves, after 4 meters, you'd be asleep. After 5 meters, you'd be asleep and much older. But after 10 meters, it overtakes the likes of an Usain Bolt breaking the 100-meter record. I think it was in Berlin. After 19 iterations, it keeps up with the space rocket as it breaks the gravitational pull of the Earth. And after 30 iterations, it's inconceivable. At that stage, David, the speed of that snail having doubled after every meter would be somewhere in the 50 million kilometers an hour. And this is the crux of it. If I ask you to imagine what 50 million kilometers an hour looks like, other than perhaps a Star Trek movie or some sci-fi space adventure that talks about a warp speed, which is made up and imaginative, we can't actually fathom the cognitive wrapping around the concept of 50 million. Even if you change the denomination, so you said, okay, let's not make it per hour, let's make it per minute or per second. I think per second it comes to something like 14,000 kilometers per second. And to put that in perspective, it means that you're circumnavigating the Earth at its widest part every 3 seconds. Still, you can imagine what a fast-moving car on a freeway looks like. You can imagine what an airplane traveling at a Mach 1 looks like, because you've been in a Boeing that does more or less that speed. But 3 times around the planet, or around the planet every 3 seconds, that's tough. And our inability to forward cast in that space using exponential or logarithmic fundamentals for a future often. And my sense is that it is this complexity, both in the mathematics and in the lack of a frame of reference, that makes the concept tangible, that's left leaders short, resulting in the very phenomenon that you are observing, albeit again with the asterisks that we started off with, the observation generalized, but perhaps not representative of all of the nuances of all of the pockets. And just for the sake of controversy, can I, as my just closing line of the opening gambit, make one mention here? Individualistic versus perhaps team. Much like democracy, the quality of your answer is in large part related to the quality of the underlying democracy. And so I would just question, and I'm not an advocate for or against, I'm merely teasing out and provoking the thinking here, is individualistic always wrong?
No, it isn't, because it's a democracy until a decision needs to be made in many contexts, right?
True.
And so I'm still trying to get my head around a snail doing 50 million kilometers an hour, okay?
Yes.
Re-explain, if you will, how using the snail example, how that works at a very, very basic level.
Okay, let's do an interesting one. If I said to you, we're going to go from 0 to 30, and I ask you, we're going to take 30 steps. So where we stand right now is at 0, then we're going to take 30 steps in a linear fashion in a straight line. After 30 steps, where would we be? And you would say, well, we are 30 steps away from here. So it's from here to the parking lot. I know where the begin is, I know where the end is, and I know that halfway is 15. And so, more or less between me and where the parking lot is, with the measure of the eye, I can spot halfway. Now, if I said to you, to juxtapose that against logarithmic or exponential, you've got to be careful of the appropriate mathematic naming there, but for the sake of this colloquial conversation, the exponential route. I said to you, we're going to take 30 exponential steps, and we're going to, the power of this exponential is going to be that we're going to double the amount of steps on every iteration. So we're going to take one step, that's the first, which is the same as where we were going to be linear. Then on the second step, we're going to take 2 steps, which means that we're now at an aggregate of 3, whereas the linear was at 2. Then I'm going to take 1, 2, 3, 4 steps. The 4 becomes 8, becomes 16. 32, 64, 128, 256, 512, 102, 4, 2048. Now the end site is not the parking lot. In fact, it's not even the zip code that you live in. It's not the state that you live in. It's not the continent that you live in. You would have, after 30 exponential steps, gone around planet Earth several times. And then if I ask you, where is halfway? And I won't put you on the spot. I've been caught out like this in my early journey around exponentials. It feels like a trick question because of how I ask it. And I wouldn't ask if it wasn't obvious, if it wasn't that obvious. And people would then catch themselves from saying 15, because obviously it can't be 15, but where is it? And so they guesstimate. Some guesses 12 or 13, some guesses that must be a bit later, so like 2021. Whereas in fact, halfway is the second last step because you are doubling on every iteration. So halfway on 30 exponential steps is 29, whereas halfway on 30 linear steps is 15. The end point for 30 is the parking lot. The end point for 30 exponential steps is undefined, very far. So if you pull this back into sort of the business world where we talk about leadership and where this conversation had a genesis, its genesis, I think why I feel sorry for leaders, perhaps in the more vintage side of their careers, is that they come out of an education regime that relied on linear thinking. And the individual and all the heroism that you had spoken about, double asterisks, I am very aware of the fact that I started this conversation with saying you can't generalize, but let's just progress a bit of momentum here. Old education regime relied on knowledge base, first of all, and the individual rising to the top to be the quarterback, the leader, the head boy, the hero, as you called it. And organizations safeguarded themselves with processes that guarded them against the outside world through repetitive, easy to follow, well-documented systems and processes, and then tried to eke out a part of the pie slice of the market through things like non-disclosure, non-compete, restraint of trade, exclusivity agreement, the moats that Warren Buffett talk about. How do I deepen and widen those moats to make sure that my economic perseverance is as guaranteed as possible? In a simplex world, that worked. In the meantime, these snails of various exponential technologies have started to double, pick up pace, and have now gotten to the point where we, as in my fund, we venture fund, so early stage investment fund, we have identified 16 of these technologies, of which AI is only one. That have now, in this era of generation, started to overtake Usain Bolt's speed. So now they're seen, and now they're downloaded. I think ChatGPT in a month had a billion users, or 100 million, or something crazy like that. And they're now starting to cause this quote unquote disruption in that they're getting noticed. Large scale adoption is happening, and the era of hype cycle has kicked off, whereby lots of exposure to these tools lead to, amongst other things, warp speed imagination type scenarios, of which the commercial endpoint we're still not entirely sure. And suddenly you have leaders. Let's say you're 60, 63, retirement ages, call it 65 to 70. Your entire career has been built on case study methodology and knowledge base, which is retrospective. You go to do an MBA, we stick 1,000 case studies into your head. Here's a scenario. This is what works as a reaction set. This is what doesn't work as a reaction set. And when you're confronted in real life with a scenario that looks similar to the one that you can recognize and remember from the case study, that's what you apply. Knowledge base. That's why you were worth so much in knowledge when you came back from an MBA. Now, the unfortunate thing for these individuals, and I'm not dissing an MBA, but just in general, again, double asterisks, is that that currency now means very little, because for the first time we are the case study. There's no actual case study to rely on. This is the first time in human history that so many exponential technologies that have an exponential pattern at this time are maturing and causing these snail overtaking moments at the same time. And to boot, it's not just the 16 technologies, some of them are converging. So you have machine learning converging with AI, arguments say converging with nanotech and robotics. So now you have small learning robots that your eye can't see, which could fight cancer in your body or deliver medicine to very specific treatment areas. And what does that mean for personalized medicine if we combine that with understanding what your DNA looks like and what a medicine regime is tailored for you? So, David, you've got a headache. You shouldn't have a Panado because your DNA suggests you have a Panado. And maybe there isn't a pill for me, so we've got to make one for me. So now we converge 3D printing onto that. And suddenly you're impacting things like longevity, lifespan, health span. And suddenly, out of the back of that, does it make sense to have a 30-year bond? Why don't I have a 100-year bond? If we add 3D printing to that, well, maybe a house doesn't cost so much that I need a bond for it. Maybe I only have a bond if I have 16 houses. Can we now print them for $2,000 a house, and it takes 24 hours to build? And we don't have to build them at a DC. We build them on the site where you want the house because the printer's on our mobile. And so I'm going fast here because I'm trying to paint a picture of chaos. Whereas we used to rely on known, finite case studies. And so if you're at the leadership of an organization, standing at the top, having risen to the top, through always illustrating the currency and value of knowledge and knowing what to do and playing the hero, and suddenly you're outgunned, outmaneuvered, out bandwidthed by the complexity of the environment around us, which ironically we've created, you must actually feel quite at a loss.
Totally.
You must be scared. We've seen, David, I can tell you, I've seen the look in the executive eyes. You know, when we paint the picture of robotics back in the day when we started warning corporates that AI is coming. And then there's first the non-belief. So that's the amygdala saying, surely it can't be. Surely there can't be a tiger in my cave. And then perhaps after a couple of immersions, taking execs to Silicon Valley, taking them to Tel Aviv, showing them robotics labs, playing with AI like a lot of people are doing today with ChatGPT, with Genesis, with sorry, Gemini and Copilot and some such. Now, it's not a thing that I can deny anymore. My experience of it is showing me that it's real. Now, one of these I can handle, but 16 of these and the permutation set that they yield when they combine in part or in full, it's almost a bit overwhelming. And then we can see the exec do the calculation. How long until I retire, and how long until this technology fully impacts my industry or my organization or my role? And if I retire before that, then they relax and it's someone else's problem. The successor will have to deal with this. And if they do the calculation, it turns out the other way. You see almost white knuckle death grip, deer in headlights, and the realization dawning that perhaps the individual currency is now not going to carry
No.
us through this tumultuous period. And I haven't actually prepped anyone else to widen the list of heroes that help lead this organization. What am I going to do? So I feel sorry for them. I think it must be a very scary position to be in.
You talked about we are the case study. So let's do a real time case study. I'm CEO of Company X, and I have done my mental or actual calculation, and I've determined that I am not going to retire before the full thrust of this intimidation and overwhelm hits, right? And so while I'm probably not going to be pretty forthcoming in admitting that to the outside world, I'm freaking terrified because I don't know what to do because I don't know the extent of what I'm dealing with here. So, practically, for the layperson, not the early adopter and the futurist, what guidance do you have for me to proceed with haste practically?
Great question. I don't think there's a model answer yet because we're not through the case study yet. But there are some nifty moves that you can do quite quickly. And I think some of these moves will require reliance on some of the skill set that brought you to where you are. That's the great news. The not so great news is that you're going to have to probably educate some of your investors. And that is not a process that because you get this and you've realized that tsunami will arrive whilst you're still within striking sphere, that because you recognize that and you now articulate it to them once that they're going to recognize it and part with yields in an environment that is still busy being disrupted, which means there are still pockets that are part of the old. So, for one, I think you're going to have to break ties with some of your past, and this is tough because I see a lot of prisoner of past success syndrome out there. We've been good at this for 100 years, and there's some sort of a belief that we'll be good for the next 100 years, which is why the budget conversation typically sounds like, you need to increase your revenue by 15% and you need to decrease your costs by 10. And so that's how we get to 25% growth. Inevitably, in practice, headwinds show up, COVID shows up, great financial crisis shows up, disruption shows up, whatever that might be, and you don't achieve 15 on the revenue, and you only manage to cut your costs by 5. So you have this linear incremental growth of your organization. And if you plot that out over time, it makes a linear line. So it's no wonder that's the result if that's your input. Now, if you are in your case, your example, the CEO that says, okay, but I can't to carry on with strategy sessions that have thousands of post-it notes. We do a breakaway to Game Lodge. There's a futurist speaker and some gin and tonic afterwards and some walking over the coals or falling blind backwards, trust exercise for my team. And we're going to make a 5-year plan. And by the time that we leave here, you're back to KPIs, and the PDF takes 2 months to come out. And so everyone's already forgotten what the hell we did, but they remember the guest speaker. I mean, okay, so
Totally,
past
what a
success,
vivid picture.
you got to get out of that. And there are new tools and new methodologies that are really working in this space. I could make a recommendation that people look at a guy like John Hagel. There's not a lot of fireworks there, but the guy's brilliant. And the zoom out, zoom in concept of setting strategy. Okay, so I'm making a short story long here. Let's go back to the essence of your question. There are a couple of super easy things that you can do. First of all, you have to create a culture of experimentation and where experimentation is celebrated. Specifically in South Africa, I would say financial services at large in the world, and in different industries with different cultures. Like think of the mining industry, which is very top down, very heavy, very testosterone and intimidation driven. Again, I recognize my asterisks from the beginning of the conversation. Failure is not really smiled upon. In fact, failure is quite often met with punitive measures that could be extreme. And in the era of not knowing exactly what the future looks like, 99% of choices are going to probably result, if at least you're trying to be strategic, in incorrect answers as reality unfolds. And it's by luck, probably, that the 1% hits. And so, what you can do is build learning curve. So, smaller experiments on a continuous basis, and then recognize that the word experimentation means that we don't know what the outcome is going to be, which means that if we knew how to build the light bulb, we wouldn't need 300 experiments. We would just build the light bulb. But we don't know how to build the light bulb, and so experiments ensue. Note, it's targeted, it's disciplined, it's frameworked, it's not negligent and reckless. For that, you should get fired. It's targeted at trying to achieve an outcome that is complementary towards helping the organization successfully intersect with a future state that takes cognizance of these underlying exponential forces driving it forward. For instance, if I asked you today, David, can you see a future in which every human on the planet doesn't have access to an ultra-smart personal assistant through some sort of a device, whether that's a Google speaker in your house or a cell phone in your hand or a 5G network that delivers it to a node? That even if the node is a 1,000 rand node or a 500 rand node, it's a dumb phone, but the smart sits in the network. Is there a world in which everyone doesn't have access to an AI level assistant? And that's sort of at a macro level. If you then trim down to how long it takes and how does it get delivered, there are intersection points that create value out of which shareholders can get the return that they're used to getting for the last 100 years, albeit in a very different way. Let's make that practical. Let's get out of the esoteric a little bit. If you're a coal company, you're a coal miner. Coal is finite. I know there's a lot, but it is finite. So at some point, coal will be exhausted. If it doesn't get exhausted first, it might be that the society takes a medium-term view of the planet and says there's only one planet that we have so far. And until we get another one, this is the only one we've got. As a result, we need to look after it. And if we just on a data empirical basis look at what's breaking the planet, a lot of it has got to do with pollution, and a lot of that has got to do with burning fossil fuels, of which coal is the main culprit. So there's a very real chance that before coal runs out, which it will at one stage, that society runs out of patience for digging up the planet to burn it. As a coal company, you're currently making great dividends, and the anomaly of war in the Ukraine has possibly prolonged the tolerance that a cold European winter has forced upon the human acceptance of what's okay and not okay. But zoom out from the current linear system that we find ourselves in. Is that a 50-year play? It's not possible. I don't know if it's tomorrow or if it's on the last day of 50 years, but I know that it's happening in that window. Now, what does the coal company do to reposition itself to bring value to society and shareholders in a value chain that soon will either be depleted or illegal? You're going to have to do some experiments about other things that could make sense. As an example, you have a lot of land. Do we think that in 50 years, food supply will be a problem? Yes. But it's almost inconceivable, and it sounds absurd to say that coal miners should become farmers. Yet, as we sit here today, there are not only South African companies that are doing exactly that, but also large multinationals that are saying we should be looking towards alternative futures and start preparing now and investing now in what those alternative futures will hold as value chains. If you are a petrol attendant pouring petrol into a combustion engine, EVs must have given you a pretty clear indication that this job can't exist as it does today in the future, and that probably the employers of those petrol attendants have actually now not only an opportunity, but it's becoming a responsibility to help reposition those current human skill sets and refine and expand on those skill sets to make them compatible with future value chains. And you can't wait until the value chain is there. You've got to pre-prep for it now. Otherwise, you're going to have a whole bunch of petrol attendants that have nowhere to go because no one's stopping at the petrol station. You won't sell petrol. It's just, I think, tough to convince shareholders that we're going to take 2 or 5 or 10% of EBIT every year and put it into a fund. If you're the coal company, just imagine how ridiculous that sounds. We organize drag lines, we organize exploration and blasting, we organize mine operations, and now we're going to plant seeds and grow cherries and nurture cattle. We don't even have those skills internal. How the hell could we be expected to do that? And yet, if you look at companies like Amazon that started as a bookshop online, and then became an A to Z, so it sells everything online. I don't have the stat in front of me, but I think it's 40% of their revenue today comes out of AWS and 60% of GP comes out of AWS, which is data centers. It's got nothing to do with books. And in fact, that edge business, as we call it, of AWS has seen the leader of the edge business, which supported the mothership in recommendation engineering and data churning. So if you bought pants that it knew to also sell you a belt or socks. It runs Amazon Prime, which is their streaming service now, streaming video and making Jack Reacher movies for a book company seems far off, yet they do it. And not only does AWS power this other edge business called Amazon Prime, it powers a competitor called Netflix. And so it's an ecosystem play. The next frontier at some level will involve space travel or space cargo, which is why these guys are launching rockets and learning how to land them so that we can have infrastructure that we can amortize over multiple uses as opposed to single use. But that is a business model of the future. How long in the future? We don't know, but we just do know that someone is going to crack it, and we must be involved in that. Stand back. You wanted to be a hero, to be the leader. Jeez, man, this is hero territory. But you just have to have the balls to lead there. You know, the chutzpah, the determination, the grit. And actually, I think if we were able to fast forward into the future and then look back at what made successful leaders in that then future, I think we'll be talking a lot about exponential explorers, people that embraced experiments within frameworks and discipline and not being negligent, of course. People that enabled ecosystem plays, for instance. The smartest people in the world don't all work at your company. It doesn't matter who your company is. Some of them have broken away and are starting little experiments, like the guys that figured out 3D printing By the way, 46 years ago, if you want to talk about how slowly that snail started, took a week to get a percolator to print a red plastic blob, and today we're printing braces and heart valves. But the best and smartest people are not all in your payroll. And so what infrastructure are you creating that goes beyond supplier and vendor agreements, but allows for your organization to invest into these early stage ideas that play with AI and machine learning and nanotech and quantum computing, which is, I think, one of the major next tsunamis is going to be quantum. And of course, today it's easy to say, I should have bought into OpenAI. But 10 years ago, if we said to you AI is coming, would you put a small couple of bets into perhaps NVIDIA and into OpenAI? Then your coal mining company would have said, that sounds stupid. It's ridiculous.
You mentioned the Amazon example, from bookstore to A to Z to X, Y, and Z. And then I'm thinking, now we just expect Amazon to do anything, whether it was growing mealies on the moon or doing something else, you know?
So there's a psychological Rubicon that you are scratching the surface on now, which is perhaps think of the coal mining company. I think Greta Thunberg did a lot, and An Inconvenient Truth did a lot to help humans bridge the psychological Rubicon of we can't carry on like this. And more often than not, you find that these major success disruptors find commercial application in a problem set that many humans share, which is why there's support and money behind it, specifically from the venture capital community and the angel community that push a lot of these boats out of the harbor at early stage. So take this one as an example. I recently read about two SPACs, so special purpose acquisition vehicles that raise money and then go and buy solutions that fit that mandate, but they're listed. So as you know, Paris has the Olympics this year, and the next set of Olympics are again in Los Angeles. The Los Angeles mayor has publicly noted that the demand for VTOLs, eVTOLs, and potentially AEVTOLs is expected. It's formally in his strategy for the 2028 Olympics, given the traffic congestion. And for those that don't know, a VTOL is an acronym for vertical takeoff and landing. Essentially, you're talking about passenger drones. An eVTOL doesn't use a combustion engine to go up and down. It uses batteries and alternative energy. An AEVTOL, which is where the current uncertainty in the industry projections are lying, is it going to be piloted or is it going to be autonomous, which is what the A stands for? Already, companies are producing commercially available, albeit in limited sphere application, passenger drones. And get this, the current standard for prototypes that are being flown right now in those airspace areas, with which regulation will catch up, we're going to talk about that in a sec, has a reach or a range of in excess of 200 kilometers. Can charge from 0 to 80% in 12 minutes, can carry 4 passengers plus a pilot plus baggage, and can do just under 200 kilometers per hour. So quickly put that onto your day-to-day life where in your backyard you have a passenger drone that you don't own that collects you, drops you on the roof. So no more parking lots. And then fast forward and think about what that does for the world. The roads that we currently use with cars. No more taxi reckless driving from a South African context. Trust me, if you're in India, you think our taxis are quite mild. No more congestion, no more frustration, no more late. On the roads are kids with bikes and dogs and strollers, and it's a total reimagination of that landscape. And as I'm talking, can you almost see it in your mind's eye? Will you perhaps also think, well, that's a problem that I currently experience, so I would be supportive of this. The psychological Rubicon is crossed quite easily there. If I said to you, we're going to mine asteroids and meteors for platinum and other commodities with drones and robots, that's a breach that's a little bit further, tougher to imagine. Will I be involved in that? Tougher psychological Rubicon to cross. And a part of the exponential leadership challenge here is to not only cross those that you're comfortable in crossing.
Sure.
You have to have enough input and enough understanding at a commercial level of these technologies, such as to be able to accurately forecast the future. Note, not code, not be an engineer that builds the technologies. The application and the utilization of those technologies in commerce with value chains being impacted is what
Yeah.
the is what I think leadership teams are challenged with. So we do a test, David, and we run a survey and we say, can you name the 16 technologies, exponential technologies? So not cloud. We're talking about things that double in their capacity, double in their capability, or halve in their price, or a combination of those three factors on every milestone iteration. And if you can't name 16, the difference between 16 and how many you could name equates to your Achilles heel in your ability to strategically steer the organization towards a successful intersection with that future. So you can actually quantify it for yourself. 16 minus your number is your risk profile. It's the size of your blind spot. Shockingly, when this survey was done for large organizations in the US, even Fortune 500s, the average in 2020 was 5.4 from C-suites. And these are the people charged with the responsibility of delivering shareholder value and ensuring sustainability, not green. The company's ability to continue economic existence. Wow.
Wow, indeed. Way beyond fads and buzzwords. I guess that's the spirit of this conversation. I'm sitting here and I feel out of breath. And I know that it's because this is sobering, and I'm so aware that I have a choice to be overwhelmed into inertia, or acknowledge the overwhelm of the unknownness and go, my responsibility to the entire broader ecosystem is to not be lazy.
So I'll latch
Yeah,
on to
go
the
for it.
lazy word you used there,
Yeah.
David. Part of your earlier question around what can people practically do, I think you have to recognize that there's going to be a curve of adoption. The early adopters, those that wait a little bit but are still in the sort of first 10%, the masses, the laggards, and those that are rebellious. And you're going to be faced with all of that as an organization as well. And one of the things that I've come across, which I thought is a great idea, is alignment of incentive to change behavior. And so think of a KPI set in the parlance of an accountant's world, where repeating the same task is met with punitive measures, trying to improve the task with innovation, even if the innovation fails, is met with a positive incentive, and innovation that works is met with a big bonus. So, for instance, you do a recon every month and you do it on Excel. Even if you do it right and it's on time every month, that part of your KPI gets a 5 out of 5, but you get a 0 and you get penalized essentially for not trying to make that automated or trying to use an API set or trying to get an AI to help you do it. As a very layman's example, if you try an AI and you don't get it right, but you can illustrate that you've tried, which had you gotten it right, would have saved you time, increased accuracy, more dependability, opened up human capital capacity, etc., but you didn't get it right, then you're eligible for a smaller but positive incentive. So there's bonus around that. And if you tried it and you got it right, well, then we can replicate it across the entire organization. So we can actually afford to give you a big bonus because of it. And so humans are creatures of habit. They'll default back to how they used to do it. Again, that prisoner of past success, perhaps this time more practical in the application of roles. And I love your word around being deliberate. Leaders, I think, can be deliberate in creating an organization that wants to come on the innovation and improvement journey through, amongst other things, these KPI alignments. But I want to cite an institutional level example. In February, the last week, the finance minister of Singapore put forward their budget for the year, and in there was controversy around some of the line items, which the deputy finance minister clarified a week later, in that there's now a grant system in Singapore, one of the countries in the world with the lowest Gini quotient, if at all. Also, notably, quite small population, so a little bit easier to manage, one might argue. Be that as it may, as an example of the art of the possible, they put together a grant system. And what that grant does is for every Singaporean that's 40 years of age or older to have its job retained, its salary retained, and go back to university full time if you are willing to study something to do with the application of artificial intelligence. And the movement reason for this, cited by the Deputy Finance Minister, was that countries might respond to this from an amygdala perspective and block it, ban it, outlaw it, and that's fine. But other countries won't. They will embrace it. And when they harness the capability and the applications that sit around this, you will not be able to compete with them. And so Singapore is saying we are deliberate about our creation of a workforce and a nation that is not only compatible with this future, we're going to try and be at the front end of the development curve and lead some of that way. Again, coming back to my persona, which I think is going to be a part of the leadership stories, at least the successful ones in the future, which is we've adopted deliberately and willingly an exponential explorer mentality and the mind frame, which we brought to our organizations in.
Yeah, I love what you made reference to the alignment of incentive to change in sort of more legacy language, successful or failed experiments, and how successful experiments are met with adoration and heroism. And exactly the same person or group of people with exactly the same intelligences, talents, could have done exactly the same thing, and the outcome was, in inverted commas, unsuccessful. Unsuccessful is often where the greatest learning resides. We glibly talk about continuous improvement, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is, where the real improvement comes at pace is when we have done something, it didn't work, or it worked a bit, but not to the full realization that we intended. It's easy to talk about these things and put them into PowerPoint decks and keynote speeches in front of, groups of smart people. It's another thing entirely to invest in that. I'd love to hear just your closing remarks around what we can do to be more intelligent in navigating the pressure of short-termism. Before you respond, what is significant about this conversation is almost every single thing that you have spoken about with examples already exists, as opposed to this kind of pie in the sky, it may happen, or what if.
You have to be deliberate about this. Innovation won't happen when people go home from KPIs and are at home. They've got lives to live. So you have to be deliberate in the structures, the culture, the infrastructure that you create at work. And the ambiguity lies in looking after the mothership business of today, which makes the money with which you are going to invest into edge and future businesses on different time horizons. So I would say you've got to invest. That means gaining access to a portfolio of early stage enterprises in which you invest, such as to bring you learning curve, talent, know-how, IP, technology, and a view of the future. You have the responsibility to educate, the example of the petrol attendant versus the EVs, so repositioning for the value chain. You've got to create KPIs that align incentives for people to financially look after themselves by jumping onto the improvement innovation curve. That also helps mothership business of today make more money that you can redeploy. A culture of experimentation and endeavor into this exponential world. So, carrot rather than stick. It's okay to fail. In fact, I'll give you a quick quip. Just in Singapore now, we were visiting a series of startups, and one startup had a mugshot wall on which you stood with a mugshot picture and how tall you are. There's a schematic behind you with a rap sheet that said, I failed at, and then the thing that you failed at. And they
That's just
celebrated those failures
no.
as something to be aspirational about. It's not negligent, it's experimental. It happens in a lab. It tries to prove or disprove a certain hypothesis. And then I think the last thing is you need to be aware. So you can't sit only in your bubble. You have to move around the world. You have to go to innovation hubs. You have to talk to someone to take you to the right places in Silicon Valley and in Tel Aviv and in Austin and in Melbourne, so that you can see firsthand what some of these experiences and technology evolutions are like, bringing you closer to understanding what those themes are, so that commercially you can talk to 16 out of 16 exponential technologies and not get caught like most of the world's execs at five.
I'm going to have a tall glass of water now. I'm going to walk at least 30 steps in a linear fashion initially, and then in a more exponential manner thereafter. My mind feels like a home invasion whenever I've had a conversation with you.
That's what new firmware feels like.